This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
I need you.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And Summer is here, and she's going to actually be doing our technical production this evening a little bit later on. However, before that, the gathering progressive storm, how 2010 is shaping up to be a monumentally difficult year for the left in America. Our guest will be Washington correspondent David Elliott, who now works as communications director for U.S. Action, which is the leading coalition effort to pass quality, affordable health care through Congress. And then at 9:30, news wrap, UNAIDS World AIDS Day, to condemn the criminalization of same-gender sex in 80 countries. The Chinese government's first official gay bar fails to attract customers. Gee, I wonder why. The New York Senate quashes a marriage equality bill, but the Washington, D.C. City Council approves one. And staff at the venerable U.S. GLBT newspapers Washington Blade and Southern Voice are trying to resurrect those publications after their owners go bankrupt. Then at 9:40, we will be discussing the upcoming Houston City election. And at the top of our second hour, 10 o'clock, the Gay Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, also called GLAAD. It's dedicated to promoting fair, accurate, and inclusive representation of people and events in the media as a means of eliminating homophobia and discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation. Our guest will be Jarrett Barrios, the president of GLAAD. Followed by Fathers First of Houston, which is a support group for bi and gay married men in Houston who are, or who were previously, married to a woman who had children within that relationship. And then at 10:40, we have our regular feature segments from This Way Out, which tonight looks at how some evangelical Christians in the U.S. have been importing homophobia into Uganda. And the second part of a look at the memoirs of gay Asian-Canadian writer Wason Choi. That's tonight on Queer Voices.
Well, yes, we have a lot of things going on. And, of course, most of us have our heads so much into the election.
There's an election?
That we'll be talking about.
Oh, yes, there's an election. Have you early voted? If you can hear my voice, tomorrow's the last day.
I have.
I have, too. I went the first day.
I went the second day.
Well, good for you. I hope everybody out there has already early voted.
Well, and before we get into our first segment, I want to make an announcement. There is the monthly Stonewall meeting tomorrow, December 8th. It happens at 6:30 p.m. at the Harris County Democratic Party headquarters, which is like the 1400 block of North Loop West. And the scheduled speaker there will be Sue Schechter, who is a candidate for Harris County clerk. I can't believe they don't actually have the address on here, but I know what the address is. With us
is David Elliott. David, are you there?
Well, I'm here, Jack, and
and Jennifer.
Happy holidays to you. Whether it's Christmas that you celebrate or a Kwanzaa.
No,
or
what we celebrate
Hanukkah,
are elections.
Or maybe none of the above.
We celebrate elections.
Historic elections.
You celebrate elections. Okay?
Yes. We have so many of them. They come once a year.
More than once a year.
Well, yeah, sometimes.
And, you know, we're going to talk a bit about elections tonight, because it's very topical. And I heard that Houston actually got some snow last week.
Yes, we did. And actually, it was a record. It's the earliest snow ever in the part of the year. And it was actually about 1 inch. And the city pretty much closed down. Yet,
wow.
The early election places had to stay open because by law they did. And a friend of mine who's been working out there and volunteering outside, you know, promoting Anise Parker, was there till closing. He stayed in the snow. Now today he came dressed up as Santa Claus.
That's wonderful. Well, David, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, you know, a bit of breaking news out of Washington, D.C. I don't know if I can accurately call it breaking news, but it's a trend that we need to keep an eye on, and it kind of fits in with the topic I was wanting to discuss tonight.
Okay.
The news is this. So far, 10 sitting Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives and one sitting Republican Senator, John McCain, all have primary challenges coming from teabagger candidates.
Really?
Yes, and we expect that number to grow. And it's pointing to a lot of fundamental philosophical discord within the Republican Party. Now, we mustn't get too excited about this, because the truth of the matter is that there's a lot of fundamental philosophical discord within the Democratic Party right now. A lot of people are really, and when I say a lot of people, I'm talking about a lot of progressive Democrats are really upset with President Obama. On the one hand, let's look at all the things that he has not done. He has not aggressively, speedily passed for ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, although it does seem like we're going in that direction. He has not aggressively pushed for a passage of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. He is just committed to escalating the war in Afghanistan, sending an additional 30,000 troops. He has not closed Guantanamo. He has angered civil libertarians. He's not completely ended special interest influence in Washington. He hasn't effectively regulated the banks, the financial system, and on and on and on. Now, thus far in his 10-month or so presidency, he has expanded the Children's Health Insurance Program. He's lifted restrictions on stem cell research. He's passed the Jobs and Economic Recovery Package, the first one. Note that I say the first one. He has, in some people's minds, saved the banking system. He's guided two of the big three automakers through bankruptcy, saving thousands and thousands of jobs. And he's pushed Congress on climate control and health care. Now, a poll came out just in the last couple of days where they asked people, who, generically speaking, who would you vote for next year? Would you vote for a Democrat? Would you vote for a Tea Party candidate? Would you vote for a Republican? And the results were rather shocking. 36% said they would vote for the Democrat. 23% said they would vote for the Tea Party candidate, and 18% said they would vote for the Republican. So we can see that the Republican brand, if you'll pardon that phrase, is kind of in the tank right now. Now, but a little bit more about polling news, and this is very, very concerning. A recent poll asked people how likely they were to vote in next year's congressional elections. Democrats said they were far less likely to vote next November than Republicans. 56% of Democrats said they were likely to vote. compared with 82% of Republicans. Three times as many Democrats as Republicans said they were unlikely to vote. Now, there's been a persistent line of argument, a bit of a pushback, in response to these numbers, saying that, well, they're not really that important because, yes, Democrats are less motivated than Republicans, but there are so many more Democrats than Republicans that it doesn't matter. But the fact is, that pushback largely is wrong, although there are some nuggets of truth contained within it. It is absolutely true that there are more Democrats than Republicans. Nobody can deny that. It is also absolutely true that this fact means Democrats can still win large victories, even with lower voter intensity than Republicans. But it is equally true that when the intensity gap grows large enough, then Democrats are poised for trouble. And that's where we are right now. That's where we're headed. Now, what can we do about this? First of all, we've got to pass health care. And the American public has to understand why health care reform is important. We're extending coverage to 30 million Americans. We're stopping insurance companies from denying people on the basis of pre-existing conditions. We're preventing a practice known as rescissions, which is where you get sick and they kind of go back and look at your record and try to figure out a reason why they can plausibly deny you coverage. All of these things. And we make healthcare more affordable for the 130 million or so Americans who are covered by an employer-based system. But there's another thing coming on the horizon, and that's that we've got to pass a jobs program, and we've got to make it work. Indeed, the most troubling problem for the Democrats right now might be that governmental interventions into the economy, the bailout, the Jobs and Economic Recovery Plan, the Obama budget, an incredibly progressive budget that passed last April, are increasingly perceived as having failed, which in turn increases skepticism about government intervention overall, whether it's government intervention in health care or in the new jobs package. We don't know where this is headed. I mean, if the jobs picture improves, so will perception of other programs, which is going to rob Republicans of much of their ammunition. But if it doesn't really substantially improve in the next year, they're going to have a lot of ammunition to use against Democrats. And, you know, if this so-called jobless recovery continues over the next couple of years, the entire next decade could be a lost cause for liberalism. So we're going to have to get a good jobs bill on the president's desk. We're going to have to get it through Congress. And I'll just throw a number out at you. You know, Obama is talking about committing 30,000 new troops to Afghanistan. That's going to cost between $35 and $40 billion. For $40 billion in this country, we could pass a public works program that would create 1 million jobs in the course of 1 year.
Absolutely.
Zach and Jennifer, I have to tell y'all, this is not a time for us to think small. This is a time for us to think big. The other side's going to come after us. We can't, going into this election year, we can't play for a tie, especially not against these clowns that are passing for Republicans these days. We have to play to win. And if there's any Democratic political operatives out there, whether in D.C. or in Houston, that doesn't understand that, then they should get out of the game now, because if they don't, then we're going to get rolled in 2010. We're going to get rolled so bad it's going to be like 1994 all over again.
Not very encouraging. But what can we do to really make a difference? I mean, from an individual's point of view.
Well, the first thing you can do is vote in every election like there's no tomorrow. Because, you know, there's always a tomorrow, but there's never an opportunity, Jennifer, that you can regain or recapture. You know, the moment that we're in, you know, this day in our history is unique, and we really could lose progressivism for the next decade if we don't pursue. The second thing that we can do is use every tool in our political advocacy toolbox. We have to learn how to use Facebook. We have to learn how to use Twitter. You know, we're Disney's at my organization. We're pretty new at it. We have to learn how to use cyberspace and radio and all of the things that we can do. We have to talk to our friends. We have to engage. We have to engage people, you know, when we're home for the holidays, those of us who have a home to go to. You know, and I guess at the end of the day, you know, and I mean, this might sound a little bit sappy or corny. If it does, I apologize. But at the end of the day, what we have to do is this. We have to care. We have to care about all those folks who don't have health care, who don't have a job, who are unemployed, who are hungry. Poverty, you know, hunger has not been as high as it is now. In a generation, we have to care.
Yes, and we have to be involved.
We have to be involved, that's right.
Yes,
Jack.
I mean, there was, you know, we look at the lines that went out and voted a year ago, they're not there this year. And in many places, we have local, municipal, county, sometimes statewide elections. Here in Houston, of course, we've got a municipal election runoff this Saturday, which we'll be talking about in the next segment. But it is important because it's important all the way up the chain, all the way down the chain. And absolutely, but, you know, even to be a little bit of selfish, we need good health care. You know, it's really difficult for a lot of people to change jobs, worrying about health care or losing their jobs with health care. And a lot of people can't afford making that payment if they lose their job to Cobra to keep that insurance for those 18 months. And I know you work very hard on those issues, and it's just so depressing to me when we got these people screaming about not wanting to help people out with health care. And, you know, it just seems to me a lot of these people probably don't realize that they're probably suffering themselves.
Well, and what we're talking about with the healthcare debate right now in Washington, D.C. is fundamental change. We're talking about making fundamental improvements in people's lives. People who have healthcare, who, you know, have that relationship with their doctor, who have that good insurance plan, they don't know what it's like to go without. They don't know what it's like for people who are going to bed every night thinking, oh my God, what if the kids get sick? What if my partner gets sick? What if I get sick? And, you know, one thing that I didn't even realize till recently, one third of the employees in this country have no sick leave.
Right, right. And most people don't realize that if they lose their job, or the company may just change their mind and stop offering health care.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because there is no mandate that companies have to offer health care.
Right. So as we proceed over the next couple of weeks, and, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to get a bill passed by the Senate before the Christmas break, and then we'll be in conference committee in January. We'll have a bill on President Obama's desk sometime around mid-January. I'm cautiously optimistic about that, but it's really important that we not dive too deeply into the weeds of the policy debate, but rather that we keep our eye on the prize. You know, it was 80 years or so ago, 77 years, something like that, that we passed Social Security. And we made a promise to our senior citizens. We're going to take care of you when you grow old. And then in the 1960s, we backed that promise up even more by passing Medicare. And then years later, we said, you know what? We're going to pass Medicaid. So if you are low income, you're going to have something that's going to help you out a little bit. In many states, it doesn't help you out enough, like in Texas. Now, what are we talking about? We're talking about the philosophical notion, the compassionate notion, promise, that we will take care of everybody in this country if you get sick.
And that's a challenge. There are people out there that really don't care. The ones that are against what we're trying to do in Washington.
The teabaggers.
They're misguided into thinking that it's somehow terrible because they really think that they have good insurance, and most of them have never had to use it other than in small ways. And the sad part is something will happen, unfortunately, and suddenly they'll find out that their health care really wasn't that good.
Well, Jennifer, you are absolutely right, and I have a suggestion. Let's work that debate. Let's expose that debate. Let's promote that debate. Let us put to the American people the premise. Should everybody have access to quality, affordable health care or not? And I've seen the polling, I've seen the focus groups, I've sat in on the focus groups. I guarantee you that it's a debate that we win by a 2-1 margin. Americans are overwhelmingly with us on this.
But unfortunately, leaders in Congress are not.
Well, you know, the Senate, and I've been watching the Senate closely lately, as you might imagine, that the Senate seems to be one of the most dysfunctional institutions I've ever witnessed in my life.
Now they need a 12-step program.
How about a 120-step program? But, you know, President Obama said on health care, quote, "Don't bet against us. We're going to get this done," unquote. And I believe him, and I think we will.
Well, let's keep out there and keep at it. That's what's important.
That's right.
Anything else we need to be keeping our eye on in Washington?
Well, you know, the big next fight in my organization, U.S. Action, which is online at www.usaction.org, this is going to be our next big campaign. The big fight that's coming is jobs. We got to pump some more money into the economy to get America back to work. And people on the other side, they say, well, you're just going to increase the deficit. But guess what? If people are unemployed, that increases the deficit even more,
right?
Because
no,
they're not paying,
yes,
taxes.
That's exactly
right.
They're
not paying right. Federal taxes. They're not paying local, state, or county taxes. And at some point, the federal government is going to intervene to help out local, state, county instrumentalities. So you're actually even increasing the deficit even more by allowing 10% unemployment, to say nothing of the human misery factor. 10% unemployment means poverty, it means hunger, it means home foreclosures, just lots of bad things. So that's coming down the line, and you'll be hearing something about that early next year.
Well, my concern still is that there is a looming commercial bubble out, real estate bubble out there that we haven't even seen, that's lurking in the distant, in the near distant,
bubbling up.
Well, Jennifer, I have to admit, I'm not an expert on that area. I will say that we have not effectively regulated the financial markets, which is tied into that. We have not necessarily cut into the loophole. We have not closed the loopholes that allowed so many institutions to make so many bad loans and to prey upon so many people who are vulnerable in that area. And so you're right. Until we close those loopholes, the risk is still out there. And, you know, a lot of people will say, quite frankly, that, you know, that's another problem that President Obama just simply hasn't been able to deal with.
Yeah. Well, what other things are you going to watch for us for the next time so we can wrap this up?
That's kind of a handful. I mean, you know, we've talked about healthcare, which after all is dealing with 1/6 of our economy. We're talking about unemployment and the greatest recession in how many generations. So I'll try to maybe just come back and bring back some better news about those things next month.
Well, I would appreciate that. I want to hear some good news, maybe some good news about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that seems to be stuck in committee.
I'd like to bring back some good news, but, you know, everybody in D.C. is going to want to go home soon, so we're not going to see a lot of action between now and when you and I next get to talk.
Well, I look forward to talking to you on, I believe, January 4th, which will be the new year, and we'll get a new report from you. Tell us who you work for during the daytime.
Well, for my day job, I work for USAction.org, and, you know, right now we're just trying to pass quality, affordable health care for all with a public insurance option, and we're trying to get the economy moving again.
Great, David. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next month, and you're listening to Career Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 5th, 2009. The gay couple who expected to marry in Buenos Aires this week became the victims of cold feet, but not theirs. Judge Marta Gomez Alsina overturned the mid-November decision of Judge Gabriela Cejas, who had ruled that denying marriage to Alejandro Freire and José María de Bello violated Argentina's constitution. In this week's ruling, Judge Alsina said the issue should be decided by the country's Supreme Court. The High Court was already considering a marriage equality case filed by another couple, and one of the justices, Carlos Feit, told reporters this week that they will issue a ruling in that case, although he provided no further details. Buenos Aires Mayor Mauricio Macri, who may be a presidential candidate in 2011, had welcomed the original decision. But he said this week that even though he supports the couple, Judge Alsina's ruling prevented him from legally authorizing the marriage. Freire and Di Bello, along with hundreds of supporters, demonstrated at the civil registry office for 3 hours, demanding that the couple be married. They vowed to continue the legal battle because, as Di Bello told the crowd, "We want everyone who loves each other to have the same rights." Both men are HIV positive, work in AIDS prevention organizations, and had purposely chosen December 1st, World AIDS Day, as the date of their wedding.
The United Nations Joint Program on HIV/AIDS, UNAIDS, released a statement on the 21st annual World AIDS Day, calling for countries to stop criminalizing LGBT people. It noted that 80 nations still outlaw gay sex, which, the statement said, not only violates human rights, but also undermines effective HIV prevention and treatment. According to the latest estimate from UNAIDS, there are 33 million people around the world now living with HIV. There were 2.7 million new infections in 2008 and 2 million deaths.
In an announcement that appeared to be a bold idea in HIV prevention, Chinese officials said this week that the government would open its first gay bar in Dali, a tourist town in the southwestern province of Yunnan, on World AIDS Day. They said it would provide a safe haven for gay men to congregate and get HIV/AIDS prevention information. The scheduled grand opening drew several journalists and photographers. Volunteers decided to delay the event because, not surprisingly, virtually no one would show up under the media glare. Shang Zhen Bo, founder of the group behind the initiative, told reporters that potential customers would be scared that their identity would be revealed, that it would lead to misunderstanding and changes in their lives.
But the International AIDS Society announced this week that the 19th International AIDS Conference has been scheduled in 2012 for Washington, D.C. It will be the first time since 1990 that the global meeting will be held in the United States. The last one was in San Francisco. The announcement followed the recent action by the Obama administration to rescind the long-standing U.S. travel and immigration ban on people living with HIV.
The World AIDS Day statement issued by UNAIDS also singled out Uganda for special attention. While same-gender sex is already outlawed in the East African nation, new legislation is likely to pass there that increases the penalty for consensual adult gay sex to life in prison, calls for death by hanging for offenders who are HIV positive, and jails people who voice support for LGBT rights or fail to report individuals in their communities whom they believe to be gay. Both British Prime Minister Gordon Brown and Canadian PM Stephen Harper have publicly condemned the draconian measures. Swedish officials threatened this week to pull the country's millions of dollars in aid to Uganda if the laws pass. The U.S. State Department has indirectly condemned the proposals, and Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams is said to be quietly lobbying the Ugandan government behind the scenes. There were reports this week describing strong links between a U.S. evangelical Christian political group known as The Family and the proposed legislation in Uganda. We'll have more about that in a special report following NewsWrap.
As we record this newscast, the dust has yet to settle down under over the Australian Capital Territory's passage of a measure to create legally binding same-gender civil union ceremonies. The federal government can overturn territorial legislation, as it did twice before when the ACT passed similar bills, claiming that each measure too closely mimicked marriage and contravened Australian law defining that institution as exclusively heterosexual. ACT Attorney General Simon Corbell has reportedly been negotiating some amendments to the current legislation with representatives of Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's Labor administration to make the measure acceptable to the federal government. But members of the Green Party, which sponsored the civil union law in the ACT legislature, have expressed a reluctance to approve what they fear will be a watered-down version of the bill. Meanwhile, thousands marched in support of marriage equality across Australia on November 28th, including large gatherings in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, the ACT, Adelaide, and Lismore. They were also protesting the conclusions of the long-awaited report by a Senate committee of inquiry that had solicited public comment about a proposed federal same-gender marriage bill. The committee recommended against its passage.
Elsewhere, the Irish Parliament opened debate this week on a bill to grant limited but significant rights to same-gender couples. While it's in many ways historic for the socially conservative, heavily Roman Catholic country, critics complain that the civil partnership bill would create a second-class status for gay and lesbian relationships and deny them important rights given to heterosexual married couples, especially in family law.
The New York State Senate defeated a marriage equality bill this week by an unexpectedly wide margin. The vote was 24 in favor and 38 against, with 8 Democrats joining all of the Republicans to defeat the measure. "Promises made were not honored," said the bill's author, Senator Tom Duane. "The LGBT community and all fair-minded New Yorkers have been betrayed," the Manhattan Democrat added. "I am enraged, deeply disappointed, and profoundly saddened by the vote." The bill passed the Assembly earlier this year. Governor David Paterson, a strong advocate for LGBT rights, had said he wanted to sign a marriage equality bill into law. Demonstrations have been held to protest the vote. Angry bloggers are also urging that Democrats who voted against marriage equality be targeted for defeat in the 2010 elections.
But the Washington, D.C. City Council, as expected, overwhelmingly approved a marriage equality bill this week in the first of 2 votes. Only 2 council members voted against the measure, Marion Barry and Yvette Alexander, while 11 were in favor. A second and final vote is scheduled later this month, and Mayor Adrian Fenty has promised to sign the measure into law. Federal lawmakers have oversight on district legislation, however, and it's uncertain if congressional Republicans will try to overturn the law.
Listing debts in the millions and no assets, Window Media and Unite Media, the parent companies of 5 U.S. LGBT publications, filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy in late November. Window owned and operated the Washington Blade and the Atlanta, Georgia-based Southern Voice, 2 of the nation's oldest and most prestigious LGBT newspapers. Unite owned and operated 2 gay publications in Florida and 1 in Atlanta. The offices of all 5 were shuttered without prior notice to employees on November 16th. The Avalon Equity Fund, a small business investment company that was licensed by the Federal Small Business Administration in 2000, owned both businesses. It had borrowed $39 million from the SBA since then and was forced into receivership last year after it violated its contract with the agency. claims and counterclaims by company executives, employees, and the openly gay owner of a Virginia newspaper chain who said he'd offered to buy at least one of the newspapers, along with seemingly conflicting statements from the SBA, have clouded a full explanation of what happened prior to the bankruptcy declaration. Staff at the Washington Blade vowed to keep the paper's 40-year-old legacy alive in a reborn publication. They issued the first edition of their D.C. agenda last week. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported last week that a foundation has offered a matching grant to help create a new publication to succeed the Southern Voice.
Three queer candidates made U.S. electoral history this week. Simone Bell won a runoff to represent an Atlanta district in the Georgia State Assembly, becoming the country's first openly lesbian African-American state legislator. Atlanta voters also elected Alex Wan as the first gay man and first Asian-American to serve on the city council. And 26-year-old Evan Lowe was elected by his fellow city council members in the Northern California town of Campbell, a suburb of San Jose, to become one of the few openly gay and one of the youngest Asian American mayors in the country.
And finally, queer actor Alan Cumming and activist Ben Summerskill, who leads the UK's LGBT advocacy group Stonewall, were each named an officer of the Order of the British Empire last week by Princess Anne in ceremonies at Buckingham Palace. The OBE is one step below knighthood, so they can't be referred to as Sir. But Summerskill told reporters that, "I meet a lot of queens every day, so it was a nice change to meet a princess."
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 5th, 2009. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
This is Queer Voices.
I don't know what's wrong with me. Everything is placed just right. A Christmas tree, big gifts for me. A chorus singing Silent Night. You'd think that I'd be headed for a great big fall. I'm just missing you at Christmas.
Christmas music from J.D. Doyle. And we want to thank him for providing that to us. That was two pieces of music. Actually, first we had James Collins, Missing You at Christmas, and then we had Elton John, Step Into Christmas. This is Queer Voices.
Be voting when it's snowing out.
Well, I start again. I think we just got...
Your microphone went on.
Speaking of Christmas,
yes.
Who would have ever thought that we would have been voting when it was snowing?
In Houston.
I wouldn't have taken that bet for sure. Especially since in recorded weather... In history in Houston, that's the earliest it's ever snowed.
Maybe it's a prelude to another history that will happen
on
Saturday.
It's global warming. Global warming.
We must first say that KPFT is a nonprofit organization and does not endorse particular candidates for a race. Certainly this show talks about GLBT issues, and we're a supporter of the community and things that go on. And as if you listen to the earlier show tonight, Anise Parker was on.
On Interchange.
On Interchange.
Sister program there.
I love that show.
Anise has a very good chance this Saturday of winning the election. She came out first in the general election, and with the runoff, which we have here for municipal elections, if you don't get 51%. An interesting note just came along here that it seems that two people high up in the Gene Locke campaign donated a lot of money, we're talking about like $40,000, to Steve Hotze, who ran a mailer out basically denouncing anybody the GLBT, but especially Anise Parker that got the caucus endorsement. Originally Hotze would not denounce such a hatred endorsement, and now we know why he won't.
You mean Locke.
Yes.
You said Hotze.
Yeah.
Well, Hotze is the one who did it, but Gene Locke will not denounce the endorsement, which some other people got endorsed also, but they denounced it.
Yes, he did not.
Some embraced it, though.
Yes.
But this is
yes.
the so-called smoking gun that links the two, where there's been denial all along, including the last debate.
And I was there in the caucus when Gene Locke came in and screamed with the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and he sounded very friendly to our community, and I was impressed with him and his sincerity about GLBT issues. It's a shame to find out that he's thrown in with the Dr. Hate.
It's almost like that anything that will get him over there, he is willing to do. He's basically willing to...
He wants to win at any cost.
Yes. And we were also there when Peter Brown screened, and Peter Brown did a good job in screening.
Absolutely. He's been a friend of our community for many years.
And now that he has lost, he's come out and he's supporting Anise, and he's helping her raise money.
He's very, very supportive of Anise. He's out block walking. He comes to the finance meetings. He's very...
And let's also declare that all three of us are involved in some way with Anise's campaign or working for her campaign.
We are active in GLBT campaigning, period.
Right. And there's a whole slate of candidates that the caucus is endorsing this election cycle, and you can go to the caucus.org to see all of those. And basically, all of those candidates... not including the HISD endorsed candidates, are the same candidates that Houston Chronicle's endorsing, which is, you know,
yes.
We've come a long way that we sort of agree on these candidates, which is really interesting. And they're all the candidates that are not endorsed by Hotze.
Right.
Well, I think the you can look at it that way, Jack, but in another way, you just look at the caucus is supporting good quality, the best candidate in each race without regard to other issues. And I think that that's why the Chronicle picked up on the endorsements of the caucus. And I'm past president of the caucus, so I have a certain...
allegiance.
Yes, allegiance and feeling for that, because, you know, I know the effort that the caucus goes through to screen individuals for endorsement. All that's happened here is that the caucus voted to endorse Anise, and now with, and not Gene Locke, And now we see why he came, his true colors came out.
Now, if our listeners
and they aren't rainbow.
If our listeners were interested in this list, is there?
I think they're a white sheet.
Is there somewhere they could go to get this list of
thecaucus.org?
Yes.
And if you early vote tomorrow at the multipurpose center at 1475 West Gray, there should be most hours somebody out there with the caucus endorsement card. And there's usually somebody out there from a lot of the campaigns that you can actually talk to and ask questions.
The paid volunteers that don't know anything about the candidate?
Well, I mean, that would give you a good answer to a lot of that. Now, Anise doesn't really have people out at the polls. And the reality is when you're voting for the top of the ticket, the mayor, most people have already made up their mind.
Right.
But it's the down-ballot races that there are usually representatives from the candidates out there, although sometimes they speak on their own behalf, not on the candidate's behalf.
And there are a lot of, we've got a number of candidates running at large that are in runoffs. So you think, well, I'm just not going to go down there and vote. It's just the mayor's race or whatever. There are other citywide races in the at-large races, and there's four of those.
Exactly.
And there's two district races.
Three of those, excuse me. Yeah.
And then two districts.
And then two runoffs in HISD.
Right. So when you go vote, you may not be able to vote for all those candidates. You'll be able to, the at-large ones and the mayor, and then if you're, depending on if you're in one of those districts that has a runoff.
Yeah, and those of you who ad nauseum heard my saga with HISD and trying to get the board to even put on the agenda expanding their non-discrimination and been roadblocked by Lawrence Marshall. Those of you down there, a good man. Adrian Collins is running against him in the runoff, and I tell you, he's a good guy, and he returns phone calls.
What week are we on with Lawrence Marshall?
It is the 23rd week since I left a message for Lawrence Marshall to return my phone call, and I've called every week, and he still hasn't.
Interesting.
Oh, very interesting.
What are the hours tomorrow for early voting?
7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Till 7.
You can go to harrisvotes.org to see the locations of where early voting is. And then on Saturday, you have to vote in your own particular polling location. So you can go to harrisvotes.org and look that up. And you can look it up by your precinct number or by your name.
One precinct going to be closed.
Yes, one of the
that's
very
gonna be
popular.
That's going to be combined, isn't it?
34 will not be open on Saturday because it's normally at the Lovett Inn and they're going to have Christmas parties. So 34 is going to be voting where 37 votes, which is the Grace Lutheran Church off of Waugh. And I can't remember the cross street, but it's somewhere a little bit north of Fairview, I think.
It's one block north of Fairview.
So don't go to the Lovett Inn.
Well, you can go to the Lovett Inn, but you won't be able to vote there. Right. You'll need to go to another location. So don't be frustrated if you should. But we're talking about this on Saturday now.
Yes, this is the day of voting.
This
tomorrow,
is the day of voting Saturday, and don't be confused. It's not a Tuesday. The runoff is held on Saturday.
Now, I know a lot of the political junkies will be down at the celebration of Anise's, which is going to be at the George R. Brown. But there's also another community-wide celebration that Charles Armstrong and his bars are putting together along the Pacific Street Triangle. And he's also going to have sort of a stage if the candidates want to come by. And
oh, that's great.
Yes, it's really, it's a really nice thing that our community can go out and really have a be together. Sort of like what he did after the general election last year with Obama.
Yes, he was so gracious to Meteor as a location for election party, and it was hosted by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and so it was just great. He's a wonderful supporter of our community, is a businessman in our community, and
I'm sure
great
he'll make
he's
a few bucks over it. But
hey,
but
you
it's
know
a
what?
Nice place that we can all sort of get
it's,
together.
It's
and
a community celebration of
it's
history.
It's okay to make money, especially in our community, especially when you're providing a service along with it.
But, you know, it's history, and this will be a community celebration. And it will not only be in Houston. This is a national significant
race.
Well,
I know there's already been calls from the Associated Press and the Wall Street Journal about the story.
Yeah, over to the caucus, I think.
Yes, and there was a story in the New York Times, and the Dallas Voice has called to talk about this. So it's a very interesting thing that we could make national history. Now, it's not just because she's a GOP member of this community. It's because Anise does have a strong background. She's been in office for 12 years. She's been elected citywide 6 times. And that's very, very impressive. And, you know, she does say that usually that's the first question a reporter brings up. But the reality is that, you know, she is the best candidate for this office.
Absolutely.
She has
the
most experience for this office. And as we said, we do not endorse. But let's just look at the reality, the facts.
And if you haven't seen a debate, there's another debate on Wednesday.
There is
one more debate.
Wow. One more debate?
Please check it out. It's very obvious to me, and this is my opinion, who is the more qualified and the more polished candidate.
Now, who's running the debate on Wednesday?
This is going to be, I believe, Channel
13, is it?
Two.
Because we had the Channel 11 one just...
Channel 11 was on Sunday. Channel 13 was last week. So
you're right. So two is left.
Yes,
right.
This is going to be Wednesday, I believe, 7 o'clock. So please watch it. And, you know, I think you can email questions into the candidates. And it's very, very clear to me.
So for the complete list of candidates that the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is endorsing, go to thecaucus.org, and you can even see some information about these candidates. You can go to their websites and find out more information. So it's very important that you be part of the group that helped make history and improve the city of Houston.
And we need every vote.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
How come the snowman's never dressed for Hanukkah? How come he's never wearing a yarmulke? I wanna know. Ho, 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 ho. And just because he's gonna melt doesn't mean he couldn't use a little gelt. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. I wanna see him with a candle. For a nose, yarmulke on his head, standing in the snow. How come the snowman's never dressed for Hanukkah? How come he's never wearing a yarmulke? I wanna know, was that so? Icicles for payas, gold gelt buttons on his clothes. Candle for a nose. Maybe this season I'll see a snowman dressed for Hanukkah. And he'll be wearing a yarmulke. Oh, ho. I sure hope so. And
that was Frank and a song called Hanukkah Snowman.
It was a Saturday before Christmas, December 19th. I was undecided about any plans for that eve, when on the radio a voice did say, "A Jerry Christmas is near,
no,
so get on the way." The voice did explain in a timbre so clear that at Dan Electro's guitar bar, great entertainment would appear. Spoken word would start out the night, and then music would play for everyone's delight. The lineup included Run Over Twice, Guy Schwartz and his Hippies, and I thought that would be nice. But not to stop there, Country Store Buffalo and the Psychedelos would play. The blues of Sonny Boy Terry and the Sideshow Tramps would pave the way for A Dance Without a Backbone by Zoa and Friends. It was then I realized that nothing else could contend. So why the great party, and what do I remit? Why a $15 cover? It's a KPFT benefit. So I sprang to my feet, and out the door I flew to 1031 East 24th Street, just south of the Loop. The doors were at 7, there was no time to waste. It's a deadbeat production with some help from Spare Change. I was halfway there, driving down North Main, and then the message concluded with this happy refrain.
We wish you a Jerry Christmas, we wish you a Jerry Christmas, we wish you a Jerry Christmas, and a happy Bob Weir.
90.1 KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
Aloha! In today's complex world, filled with complicated instructions like do this, turn here, don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate, one way, etc., etc., why not take a break from all of this? Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew. Venus Envy, and the song was called Silent Dyke.
Okay.
No pun intended.
Well, don't we have an interview with people of GLAAD?
Yes, we do. And I believe he's on the phone. And the newly elected president, Jarrett Berrios. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
And who am I talking to?
This is Brian Levinka, and we also have...
hey, Brian, how are you?
We also have Jack Valinsky.
Hi, Jack.
Hello.
How are you doing? Nice to hear your voice.
And we also have...
Jennifer Renee.
She's the T in our...
Yes, I'm the T that's no longer silent.
Yes.
Yay! Stop being silent. We like that you're there. Nice to talk to you.
Very and good. We're so happy to have you on the show.
I'm sorry, but it was Jennifer Lee?
Jennifer Renee,
yes.
Jennifer Renee. That's my father's name, Renee. Nice to meet you, Jennifer Renee.
Nice to meet you, too.
Well, Mr. Barrios, you are a busy man. I've been trying to get you on the radio for a while, and you've been out pushing...
Sugar, I just got to tell you, we met... Did Jennifer Renee, did he tell you where we met?
No, he didn't.
We met.
So we got a story here.
We met in D.C. at National...
In a bar. It was a smoky old bar, yep.
It was a wonderful bar, and GLAAD did a really cool event there. And, you know, it was nice because the old president was there, and then there was you, who was elected in September, I believe.
June, but I started my job the day after Labor Day. Yes, sir.
So for our listeners out there, tell us a little bit about GLAAD and what the wonderful mission that it has.
Well, GLAAD is in its 25th year. We've been around. Really, we sort of started out of real concern around the way the AIDS crisis was being covered in some of our bigger cities, New York and L.A. in particular, and a lot of the homophobia that was involved in that. So it wasn't so much like ACT UP, which focused on AIDS-related issues, but it was concerned about how gay men in the AIDS crisis, but in general, gay men, lesbians, and eventually bisexual and transgender folks were being covered in the press in very stereotyped ways that oftentimes confirmed people's kind of intentions to be discriminatory. You know, well, they don't deserve equality.
Right. We've come a long way from Boys in the Band. And,
so.
You know, I think we all had a fight, and even before GLAAD was around, with those stereotypical images, because mostly when we were in movies of any type, we were the crazy people, and then we usually got killed.
The murderer, or sort of the quirky, you know, sort of butler, or some of these.
The crazy interior designer.
Oh, the crazy trans person.
Yes.
We were all crazy.
Now, well, Jerry Springer didn't do any help to the trans community.
So tell me, what is your focus with GLAAD, and where are you taking us with this organization?
So that's where it started, mm-hmm. and really the work has never stopped. And one of the things that I have to say, if there's one pet peeve I have, it's people that say, well, we've already won. And they'll say, well, we won Hollywood. And it's true that maybe you walk around West Hollywood and everybody, you know, nobody cares that you're gay, or nobody, you know, everybody else is gay, whatever. But it's the rest of America that really is where the fight is. It's kind of in between the East Coast and the West Coast there that we've got a fight on our hands. And GLAAD, we don't do the lobbying work. We look to our friends, the task force and HRC and all the state equality organizations to do that. We don't do the campaigns, and we don't do the courtroom work. We do the culture change work. So we work, for example, advocating in the news for fair coverage. We have a national news department. So I'll just give you an example. Part of that national news program, we do work in religion. And we were very active around the Lutheran Convention this past August, where they were going to be voting on whether or not to allow openly gay and lesbian folks who were in committed relationships be ordained Lutheran ministers. That was a very important vote that had been lost for several years, which forced a lot of folks to either leave the Lutheran ministry or to hide their same-sex partners. We had a lot of concerns going into it this year because we've lost several years. Ann Craig, who's the director of our program, worked very closely with the Lutherans on the ground to basically do the press. Now, the way she did it, and this is really good example, I think, of understanding how GLAAD does its work, she went and worked with the Presbyterians earlier that July. She worked with a lot of the openly gay Presbyterian folks, because they were having the same vote, and we were going to lose that vote. And what had happened in previous years is that when we lost that vote, it was really bad momentum. going into the Lutheran convention. So she went down there and she worked with the press, and the story she got, even though we knew we were going to lose, we knew we were going to lose by less than we'd lost in previous years. And so the story that she was able to tell the press, and which the press then wrote about, was that we had made historic gains among the Presbyterians. So even though we lost, we got closer than we ever had. So that was the article. It ran as that Lutheran convention was starting, and I guess one of the things I learned here was that Lutherans apparently like to think of themselves as one step ahead of the Presbyterians.
Right.
It was a real important way to frame the debate among the Lutherans to have the Presbyterian story out there. And then Anne went and worked the entire Lutheran convention, got several stories in national news outlets, which really created and kept that momentum going at the Lutheran convention. And that's really the power of the media, right? That media can make or break you. And it's so important to make sure that we are using the most effective messages and framing for our equality.
Well,
and
you know,
that's one example of the kind of work we do.
It's really interesting. I mean, we have more media outlets than we have ever had before, but in reality, we have less news being covered than ever before. And certainly, we have things like National Public Radio that tries to, you know, we think does a decent job, but then we've got things like Fox News that just goes off on says whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
They make it up.
You know what? I love all the new gay characters that we're seeing on TV. Do you have anything to do with that, Mr. Barrios?
Oh. Isn't it one? I mean, I got to just say, what's your favorite?
I like Modern Family, the gay couple on there.
Yeah.
I like the whole scene where they had the adopted child and they were so dramatic and doing the Lion King. That was so hilarious to me.
Yeah, I got to say, my favorite one is Glee, you know?
Oh, my God.
Gosh, I love Glee.
Isn't the way that boy's relationship with his father is so touching.
You know,
it's
so
important.
I was thinking how positive that was, how that came out on the show, and what, you know, the next generation is seeing how a father reacts to that.
If Bob Cameron, he brought tears to my eyes.
And then that later episode where the father was getting harassing phone calls. And so people got a real sense in that. This is part of how I think we've made progress, right? I mean, think about Will and Grace. And, you know, life was just all fun, right? And nobody had a sense about the difficulties, the barriers that we faced. So is it surprising that so many people, 70% of Americans, think that it's illegal to discriminate against gay people in the workplace, that we can't get fired just because we're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender?
That's not true.
As you know, 29 states, there's no such law.
And we have no protection here.
I lost my job when I came out.
And that happens a lot. And I got to tell you, those stories which go beyond just sort of the quirky gay best friend making jokes to telling our stories, like the difficulty that boy had coming out and then the difficulty the family faced.
Yes.
When brothers and sisters, right? Some of the problems that they're having. I don't mean the affair that's going on, but the Prop 8 and the problems adopting, all that other stuff. It's important for Americans to see that it's hard, and the difficulties you're facing are because of discrimination in society.
Exactly. You know, just a few years ago when Ellen came out on TV, it was such a scandal, and so, you know, publicized, and now it's not a big thing, and now we're talking about her and Portia on her show.
Yep.
And, you know, we've come a long way, but I think you're right, we have a long way to go, and especially in rural America, the middle square states.
Well, last year we had a openly trans person as a character. Do we have any on TV right now?
No, we don't. Not this year.
Jennifer, you need to go on TV.
Not in terms of regulars in what we call scripted series. There have been a number in the so-called unscripted series, which is to say the reality shows. There was a young transgender woman who was on America's Best Dance Crew. She and her openly gay men who were part of her dance posse performed over the summer. We actually had a little issue. GLAAD does a lot of our work in these entertainment shows. It seems that a lot of times the big issues that come up are around transgender issues. And so we find ourselves calling and educating networks on how to talk about this stuff and how to comment on stuff. So we had a judge that made some unfortunate comments on that show, but she was on the series, because they did very well in the contest. She was on it most of the summer.
That's great. Well, that's where a new inroad we still need to work on.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the GLAAD Media Awards and what the spectacle and awesomeness that is. Can you tell us about that and what's coming up down the pike?
Well, we do, you know, GLAAD, we have chapters in a number, or they're called leadership councils in a number of communities, but we, in our three biggest communities, the areas that we have the largest support historically have been New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, and in those three cities, we do media awards. The media awards do a couple things. They're obviously a big fundraiser for organizations, how we pay our bills. But the other thing it does is it allows us because so much of the rest of the year we are we're kind of beating people up. We're beating the networks up for different shows and bad stuff they're doing. It's important that one time a year we actually talk about the good stuff.
The good stuff.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so we will give awards for different shows, for actors, for directors, for stories, and not just in entertainment, you know, for news stories and a range of things. And it's our way, it's sort of like the carrot and the stick, right? Like, it's our way of really highlighting the stuff that's good. And that's an important part of our program work. So while it's a nice spectacle, it's a good party, it's not just a party. It's a way of recognizing the good work, which creates, I'd like to think, it kind of creates, kind of raises the bar. What are the best examples of how good you can do? Giving people real examples of what that is.
Exactly. Now, Mr. Barrios, I have to publicize an event that you have coming up. Is it next Monday, December 14th, you're going to have a conference call, or is that like a video conference with yourself?
Well, it's a video conference, and if folks are interested in doing it, we have a lot of, we have about 40 of them, 42 of them, I think, scheduled at this point. We're doing a video conference. People are having house parties for GLAAD. And you can go, you can do a party at your house, have all your friends over, and then link into the site, and then we have people texting in their messages about a lot of different questions. No, and it's we've done it. This is the third time we'll be doing it. It's a nice way to reach people, and we're, you know, obviously we're encouraged about the participation, although this next one's going to be the biggest one so far, because it's hard to think of 42 parties all at the same time. You're talking to all those people at once, you know.
You're going to be the star, right?
You got to, like, comb your hair or something, get your hair out of place.
Right.
I'm nervous.
If anyone is just tuning in, we're talking to the president of GLAAD, Jared Barrios. Is it Barrios or Barrios?
Barrios.
Yes, a key in Texas is stop Barrios.
Right. You have to roll the R.
Now, I was talking to your publicity guy earlier today, and he was telling me that you were one of the first openly gay representatives in a legislative body, and I don't remember which one. Can you tell me about that?
I guess in the House. I was the first openly gay man in the House. I mean, we already had Barney Frank, though, in Congress, so it's a little different than some states. But I'll tell you, the culture of that place, a little small-minded place in some ways, at least for those early years I was in. I was elected for about 9 years. I left about 3 years ago. I resigned to run a large health foundation.
And then they pulled you out of that to come to GLAAD, I guess.
Yes, that's right.
So what is your vision for GLAAD? Where do you see it going?
Well, I'd say like three things. The where it's going is where you all take us. That is to say, you, the media. As the media is changing, the way we do our media advocacy has to change. Increasingly, people are not reading newspapers, and they're getting their news online. They're getting it through social media networks. And so GLAAD has to go there. And the work we do goes there in virtual communities where we see lots of homophobic interactions, stuff that we need to take on, homophobic and, by the way, transphobic. Forgive me.
Oh, yes, please.
We're not saying transphobic. Yeah. There are important challenges that we are going to be facing. And these are not the challenges that are exactly like some of the legislative battles that we have ahead of us. But I think when you ask yourself the question, why have we lost a lot of these ballot initiatives? We've lost because not because we've run bad campaigns. Although, I mean, there have been a couple of them been bad campaigns, but most of them have been good campaigns that have been run.
Right.
But we haven't changed enough the hearts and minds of enough people to win that yet.
And we have the other side pushing their outlets and their avenues to kind of go the other way.
Yep.
Now, this is a good time to plug your Facebook. I'm assuming you have a Facebook group that you can
plug. We've got a great Facebook page. We actually just set up a new Facebook page. We had sort of a fan page, but we decided to set the Facebook page because we've got a lot more that you can do in sort of promoting work. And we've got we set it up the day before Thanksgiving. We've got like 6,000 friends already. We love it.
Well, we're here in a city of 2 million people, so let's see if we can add to that.
So you can put a couple more, huh?
Yeah,
we'll
Hopefully we get some more. Now, is there a website that people can go to and learn?
www.glad.org or glaad.org.
And I'm going to put you on the spot. What does that stand for?
Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Although, honestly, our mission is much broader than that. For example, we do work in bisexual and transgender communities as well. We're not just gay and lesbian. We also don't just do anti-defamation work. We do a lot of stuff which is proactive. So that work that we did in the story that I mentioned to you about the Lutherans, that was a proactive story. There was no defamation there, but we were very much engaged in moving and taking a step forward in that regard. We do a lot of work in sport homophobia. We do work on campaigns. We don't politic. We do the communications work. So
the
in
media.
That Washington,
yeah.
Exactly. So in the Washington State campaign, where they had that ballot initiative in November, we had our guy up there as basically their communications director. Running the communications part of that.
Which of the networks is has the most GLBT people on it?
Right now, it would be ABC.
I'm loving ABC.
In terms of the scripted series.
Yes.
ABC with Modern Family, I think Ugly Betty.
Yes.
Brothers
and Sisters.
There's a few shows. Fox is number two, believe it or not. Fox Network, which is not Fox News.
Right. And then that's that little station Bravo has a lot of stuff too. Okay.
Right. Although, yes, they do. But most of Bravo is what we call unscripted. It's all reality shows.
Right.
So we don't. I mean, in the way we kind of look at TV, because with scripted television, you can really see where the plot line's going, and so it's not just somebody who drops in from the show for the reality. You know, you can really develop characters and really get inside people's hearts. You know.
Well, Jared, I appreciate you coming on Houston's Queer Voices. I met you at the National Equality March, and I was very impressed with
in
the speech.
In a bar?
Well, in a bar. You know, how do gay people meet?
Tell the truth.
That's right. It was a bar. You went to a sleazy bar. And
I
you
won
met
tickets
him.
I to Hall & Oates that night, so I was very happy.
you were not really happy. You got up there and you said, I can't go. I want something else.
I know. But we're talking to the president of GLAAD, one of my favorite national organizations doing a great work. And for more information, you can go to GLAAD.org. Become a member, support this organization, and, you know, help fight the fight.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon now.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
Santa's got the blues singing ho, ho, hum. He's spending every summer in the sanatorium. This mercenary Christmas gig is making him sick. We gotta medicate him, get him into therapy quick. Frustrated from looking for a change in career. He's gotta earn enough to feed a stable full of reindeer. So much giving without getting, that it feels like a sad, sick, a greedy Christmas list. Kids who pee in his lap. Oh,
Santa's got the blues singing ho, ho, hum. He's spending every summer in the sanatorium. Those visions of sugar crumbs are driving him wild.
The next kid on his lap better be his inner child.
Now Santa found an analyst who's into gestalt. She told him the world's avarice was not all his fault. But Santa's feeling insecure, so sad and adrift. He's scared that no one's gonna love him less he gives them a gift.
Santa's got the blues singing ho, ho, hum. He's spending every summer in the sanatorium. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back.
Talked in his sleigh a big jar of Prozac. Santa started talking about ending it all. So his therapist arranged a family conference call. Mrs. Claus said, come on, Santa, it's not as bad as you fear. Why, after all, you only work for one night out of the whole year. And while you and the reindeer are out there enjoying yourselves, well, I'm stuck here cleaning up after hundreds of elves.
Santa's got the blues.
How come nobody ever gives me a present?
Santa's got the blues.
The lines at Walmart are killing me.
Santa's got the blues.
You wouldn't believe my veterinary bills.
Santa's got the blues.
You try getting any reindeer through customs.
Santa's got the blues.
That was the Therapy Sisters' Santa's Got the Blues. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in the studio tonight, we have members of an organization that I've heard about, but I wanted to get more information, and they contacted me. So, of course, we asked them to come on the show. And they were with Fathers First, and they are Dr. Larry Ponder.
Yes.
And Mr. Rob Keeling.
Yes.
And what is Fathers First? Tell us what is this organization about.
Fathers First of Houston is a support group that meets every Monday. And it was formed more than 15 years ago by a group of men who needed people to talk to that had some similar life experiences. And our similarity is that we're a group of gay or bisexual men who at one point either are or were married to women and fathered children. And sometimes, as a group, we have some common issues related to being fathers, but also having wives and ex-wives, and all the issues with family and in-laws and things that go with that.
Now, the first thing that comes to mind is, what was it, closeted men that were in relationships that came out later?
Well, some are. You know, we're a group of men that are all walking our own individual paths. Some of us are totally out now. Some of us are divorced. Some of us are in the process of divorce. And some are still closeted and needing a place where they can talk with other people that are similar to them.
Right. And how is society's changing affecting your group? Are you finding that there are less and less people coming to the meetings, or is it about the same, or what's going on with the society changing as it is?
Well, I think it kind of fluctuates, you know. It's a group where there's constantly a flow of new people come, and while they need that support, they're there, and sometimes when they don't need so much support, they don't come as often. So it's kind of a different group every Monday. As far as the age group, we have a variety of age group from people.
We do. And as far as society changing, that's part of what makes the difference. Our members of the group, folks who come, range from their 20s to 60s. Mm-hmm. And coming out at different points in their lives. Some guys who were raised in rural areas where they just didn't see coming out ever as an option.
That was me. And now I'm on a gay radio show.
You're hiding out.
I'm there's nothing hiding about it anymore.
Myself. My father's a high school football coach. It didn't seem like an option.
And the butch voice, I mean, you got the whole thing going on, so definitely.
He didn't say that to me.
I thought about you. Now, do y'all have social events where the families, like the kids, come out, or is it just men only, or how does that work?
In the past, when there have been larger groups of people that had younger kids, they would plan things with the kids on their weekends. We try to socialize every once in a while. We have a Yahoo group where we can post things. Sometimes someone will say, "Hey, I'm bored tonight. Anyone want to go do something?"
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of that is one guy getting together with a couple of other guys. The only drawback to getting everyone together with their kids are the age ranges of the kids.
Yeah.
Right now, the father with the youngest child in the group has a 3-year-old, and then a number of guys in the group have kids who are in their 30s.
Now, how did this all get started? How long ago do y'all?
You know, we're not really sure. It's a group that changes as new people come. I've only been going to the group about a year and a half, but I'm kind of one of the volunteer facilitators now. It's as new people come in, some of the people that have come in the past have moved on to other places. There's a similar group in Dallas, I understand now, and it just kind of changes. And so I don't think we have anyone who comes regularly now who was part of the very original group when it first started.
Wow. Now, do you all have a set meeting place, or does it change, or do you want to tell our listeners where it is, or do you want them to contact you? just to keep it on the down low.
But, so. Well, actually, where it's located, it's not a secret. We meet at Bering United Methodist Church.
Okay. I didn't know. I'm trying to keep the anonymity.
Great facility for our community.
Yes, it is.
Very supportive in so many ways.
And although some of the guys who come to the group are not yet out at all and they haven't made the decision of what to do, most guys find the group when they need it the worst, which is when they've just made the decision and emotions are running high and they need someone to talk to.
They don't know where to turn.
I came out to my wife in 05, started coming, we separated in 06, and I found out about the group from someone else I met with a similar story. And it has just been a lot of help over the years.
And if people are out there listening, is there like a website that they could go to?
Yeah, www.fathersfirstofhouston.com, and that gives some good information there.
Now, how about your children? How do they feel about you coming out and now with this group and meeting other kids of fathers who are also gay or bi?
Well, my kids are adults, so it's a little different situation. Their level of knowing and what they want to know is different because of their age. I don't talk with them a lot about, you know, my group. They know I go to a support group on Monday that's at a Methodist church. That's pretty much it. My middle son knows that I go to a different church now. I go to the Metropolitan Community Church, mm-hmm. and I overheard him talking with someone else. Says, "Well, Dad goes to a weird church now." I figured he looked it up on the website. Knows it's a church that ministers to gay and lesbians.
It's a welcoming congregation.
Absolutely,
it's a
welcoming congregation.
Yes, we've had them on the show.
Yeah.
Now, what else do you want our listeners to know about the group? I mean, what else do we want to tell them?
Well, mostly that the group exists, so that if they ever run in for themselves, or if they ever run into someone in a similar situation who needs someone to talk to, that the group exists. And then now with the internet, you know, you can kind of look and find that. If you search, you know, gay dad support group, it kind of comes up the way that it's set up. You know, I did not know about this group. I found it kind of quite by accident. You know, I came out to my wife and family and then was separated. And then about 6 months later, accidentally found out about it because they interviewed some of the guys for an article on Outsmart.
Well, that's what we're here to do, is to get the message
out. It's kind of it's kind of difficult. How do you let people know about this for the people who don't know where to look for it?
Yes, and hopefully they're listening right now.
Yes.
Now, well, a lot of times they may be lost. You know, uh-huh. It's got to be a traumatic experience to come out to a family, but no matter what age mm-hmm. your children are, because when I came out, my children are all adults, but mm-hmm. still, there's still a traumatic
yes.
experience that goes on in it.
And one thing that is not universal, but relatively common among guys that we've seen, frankly, it tends to be easier when children are younger. My kids were early teens, just coming into their teens, when they learned about me.
And how did they react?
Actually, they found out about the divorce first, and it was almost a year before they found out that Dad's gay. And frankly, that made it easier for them. They understood that was a reason. They already knew that being gay was not a choice. And they said, you know, oh, that's why you weren't happy for all those years. And they think I'm a much nicer person to be around now. And they're fine with hanging around with all my friends.
Well, gay men are happy, right?
Well, yeah. Well, but, you know, it's sort of different. My daughter had friends coming out in middle school. One of her best friends was a lesbian in middle school, and I'm blessed.
Now, I imagine that a lot of dads are out in the suburbs. Do you see a lot of dads coming out in the suburbs and then needing the support group, or is it inner city, or is it a mix? Or
I was out in the suburbs. I was just north of Sugar Land, and at the time that I found the group, there were several that were out in the suburbs, and, you know, eventually it's like, you know, if the support group's in Midtown and my friends are in Midtown, we start to see us move in closer.
I moved from Sugar Land to Midtown, so yes. Yes, so, but I guess that since you have a different range of ages, and now the society's changing, our culture's becoming more open, the kids are like, so what? So it's just, you know, something that I guess the dad has to come to terms with, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot about how the group when it first started, but I have a sense that it was more older men, and yeah. We do have, you know, several people that show up that are in their 20s, you know, been married 3 or 4 or 5 years,
wow.
and coming out versus the 12, 15, 20, 30 years.
Okay. Better than being married 30 years and saying, okay, oh, by the way, let me talk to you about something.
I know, I'm in my mid-40s, and I expected when I first started coming to the group, I really thought I would be one of the oldest. And I'm pretty much in the middle of the age range.
Well, I imagine with, you know, the Stonewall, everything before Stonewall was so in the closet, you know, you were to get married, have kids, that was just the way things were done, especially mm-hmm. in Texas, where we live in mm-hmm. Bubba land. But I think, you know, things are changing now. So are there other events, social events, community events where y'all appear, and do y'all go to the Pride Parade? Or
In the past, the group has walked in the Pride Parade. We haven't the last couple of years, but that's something that we've talked about doing again. One of the things, because at different times there are more, it may be more closeted people than more out people.
Right.
And one of our conversations this last year is, okay, if we actually say we're going to do this, well, if we have two people walking together for a support group, it doesn't look as good as 50 or 60. So
yes, yes. I do remember y'all were at the AIDS Walk a couple of years back. I remember seeing your group.
Yes, yes.
So that
and we had some this last year at the AIDS Walk, too. We didn't have matching T-shirts, but we were there.
You're there, they're supporting. And
it was cold and rainy.
Exactly. So we're talking to Fathers First, Dr. Larry Ponder and Rob Keeling. The website is
www.fathersfirstofhouston.com.
Now, is there an email that they could maybe, is it on the website? Or?
Well, actually on there's a link to get to the Yahoo group, and one of the requirements is you have to attend a meeting first and then send an email requesting to be a part of that group, because, you know, that's protected for people who are not out as
right.
well.
What would you advise someone out there that's hearing this maybe for the first time and says, and who is in the same dilemma that y'all were in? What's the advice you would give them?
Find people to talk to.
No doubt.
Don't try and do it alone.
It sounds horrible, but in a way, just to hear other people's stories, to make you know you're not the only one with that sort of pain, helps ease it.
Right. And is there guilt with the kids? And
there's tons of guilt. Tons of guilt. And that's... You know, and that's what I think. We have a member of our group who has his little guilt speech. And when people are talking and we says, okay, if he's not there, then I say, oh, so-and-so needs to be here tonight, because he's got his little guilt sermon. But, you know, what we did and the decisions we made at the time, we didn't make with the intention of hurting people.
Right. No,
we did it because
did.
At the time,
did.
This is what we thought was right. We thought we were doing the right thing. So to look back now and have guilt over things that happened, you know, what we knew at the time, we did right for at that time.
Right.
Yeah. None of us went into our marriages thinking that we were going to get divorced for any reason.
Right. You know, I think you need to live for yourself. And I think that's the general message to anyone who's in the closet, you know, just be who you are.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have to be true to yourself. To the known self be true, and which is so important for all of us. And I know that in my own personal experience, I didn't mean to hurt my siblings, but they were.
Mm-hmm. You know the rest of that quote? To thine own self be true, so thou canst not be false to any man. And so much times we hear just the beginning of that quote, right. But the rest of it goes with it. Because when you're true to yourself, then you can't be false to others.
That's right. That's right. You are comfortable in your own skin. You can then talk with people with a sense of integrity and truth that you don't have when you're closeted, if you will. Or hiding something. You don't even have to be JLBT to hide something from someone.
It's very true.
Well, we're talking to Fathers First, and if you yourself are in the closet and you're in a relationship with a woman and you're
got
gay,
a family and you need someone to talk to because it's just not working, these are the people to talk to.
And the website is
www.fathersfirstofhouston.com.
And the meetings are
Mondays, and starting in January, the meetings will be at 7:30. They currently start at 8, but we're going to move it to 7:30 to 9, starting the first Monday in January. And the first thing we do at the meeting is go over our group norms. So if you're someone who's not out, we talk about what our group norms are to hold everyone accountable for confidentiality and everything.
All right. Well, we thank you for being here
tonight. And Dr. Larry Ponder and Rob Keeling of Fathers First, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
This is Queer Voices.
Gay Asian-Canadian writer Wason Choi discusses the love of extended families, Santa Claus, and his memoir, Not Yet, later in the program. But first, another type of extended family has been in the news lately. Uganda President Yoweri Museveni claims that Europeans are trying to import homosexuality into his country. But some evangelical Christians in the U.S. have, in fact, been importing homophobia into that East African nation. Openly lesbian news commentator Rachel Maddow detailed those connections on her MSNBC cable show this week.
The government of Uganda is considering passing a law to execute gay people. Execute as in by hanging a, quote, serial offender or an HIV-positive person who commits same-sex acts. If enacted, this law would also impose a 3-year prison sentence on anyone who knows of a gay person in the country but doesn't report that gay person to the government within 24 hours. Who is supporting and promoting this legislation? In a moment, we'll speak with Jeff Charlotte, who's written extensively about the secretive evangelical religious organization called The Family. We first started discussing The Family on this show when it emerged as a player in not two, but three Republican sex scandals. Those of South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, Nevada Senator John Ensign, and the alleged sex scandal involving former Mississippi Congressman Chip Pickering. The Family, among other things, provides well below market rent housing for a select group of members of Congress at its, until recently, nearly tax-exempt church on Capitol Hill, a house called C Street. Jeff Charlotte is now reporting that the president of Uganda and the legislator who introduced the Kill the Gays bill are both members of The Family. Joining us now is Jeff Charlotte, author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. He's also a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine. So who introduced the Kill the Gays bill, and what's his connection to The Family?
It's a member of parliament named David Bahati, who's been very involved with a sort of conservative evangelical revival in Uganda, very involved with a lot of American evangelical groups, and has also taken a leadership role in the family's Uganda operation through something called the African Student Leadership Program and through Uganda's National Prayer Breakfast, which is an offshoot of the prayer breakfast the family hosts every year here in the United States.
In the big picture, why is the family interested in Uganda? Why are they interested in operating there, and what are their goals there?
Well, the family has always viewed its religious outreach, its worldwide spiritual offensive, as they describe it, in very clear geopolitical terms. Uganda right now is an incredibly important country for world politics. It's functioning in many ways as a U.S. proxy with Sudan, with Congo, with Rwanda. There's oil in that general region, and the family needs to have a presence out there. They've had that presence in Uganda since 1986, when they sent over a man to recruit Museveni, who was then the new leader, then looked like a bright democratic spot in African leadership, and they recruited him to be one of their main brothers, as they put it, for the whole continent.
So President Museveni in Uganda, he's not explicitly backing this horrendous bill, but it is thought that he tacitly supports it, at least as far as I can tell.
It's hard to call it passive support when he's coming out there and saying that homosexuality is a plot that's sort of being imposed on Africa by Egypt and that, or I'm sorry, but by Europe, and that that this is a time for Africans to rally together against the sort of the foreign influence of homosexuality. And just last week, in fact, Museveni responded to questions from Uganda's main newspaper: is he a part of the family? And his press secretary said, "Well, I can't answer that, but it certainly sounds like an organization the president would like to be a part of, but only if they really, really hate homosexuals."
Wow. Jeff Charlotte is author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. Thanks, as always, for joining us, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rachel.
You can watch The Rachel Maddow Show online at MSNBC.com.
Hello, I'm Carol.
And I'm Maria. And together, we're Zrazy.
And we're crazy about This Way Out,
the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
As a gay man, I'm also a minority in a Caucasian gay culture. So I just thought, so many things are not yet. I've almost died twice. What does it mean?
Last time on This Way Out, gay Asian Canadian writer Weisen Choi described his two near-fatal heart attacks and the friendships that bolstered his recovery, all of which inspired his new memoir, Not Yet. In this week's conclusion of a reflective conversation with our Brisbane correspondent John Frame, the now 70-year-old writer expands on his definition of family and blames Santa Claus for his collections obsession.
Certainly when you're at my age, at the what I call the other end of the rainbow, you have to really accept something about your life that makes sense of your life. I'm not religious. When I wrote this book, I thought, well, what do I have to say? And Oprah won't phone because, you know, I didn't have a great conversion to this, that, or whatever. I was a sinner and now I'm a saint. That would never happen. So all I knew was I wanted to write this book just to understand what it is to be oneself. And above all, to discover that family is who loves you. During the AIDS crisis in Canada, as in the United States, many AIDS victims, I call them, because simply who can say who was lucky or unlucky? But if you were unlucky, sometimes during that panic of that illness, people deserted you, friends couldn't go near you, family might even drop you. But then there were those who came to be with you. I've spoken about this because as a gay man, I think I want all of us who have unique relationships that are deeply, deeply meaningful to us, we should realize, as I realize, that's not for everybody maybe, but family is who loves you. And I remember being beside some of the patients who were thinking they were deserted and alone. I realized I couldn't be anywhere but with them. And I sometimes said, you know, I know you're going through a difficult time, but I want to be with you. I want to be here. I like to think I'm family. And sometimes the tears would flow. Sometimes, I don't know what the feeling was, but it made me feel we had the right to call each other who we were when we needed each other, which was family. And it's not simply to just make it sweeter. I think truly there is a situation where human beings have no other reason but to be family. And that's the only word. It shouldn't depend on bloodline or on being straight and logically, you know, officially okayed by religion or by civil law. It is human beings making contact when it matters. And I think my book then is a love story. When I was in the hospital, many people signed up to come and see me. They're allowed to come into the ICU as their family. I had so many people come, including my extended family members, and only two of them were Asian. And I remember one of the nurses were cutting back the numbers because it was getting a bit much, and they had to, and I understood that. So I gave them the names of the people that were, you know, living with me. And then she said, but, you know, they all call themselves family, and there's only two of them that look Asian, Mr. Choi. And I said, oh, really? Well, you know, I hope you don't mind, but they all look Asian to me. And she laughed and she said, I get it. And I said, yes, they're family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very lovely moment.
Now, there's one element that it's a repeat topic on the Oprah program, is decluttering so that you can get on with your life. Now, for yourself, now I do this. My room is overburdened with things that. But you're right. On page 93, you say abundance means potential.
Yes, potential, possibility. I used to think that I must be obsessive compulsive. And I have to admit, one of my friends says to people that know me, I love the first 10 of everything Wason has. But I find things, I'm a stationary freak for one thing. I find that I'll be writing letters on this. I can see me using the envelopes, I can see me licking the beautiful stamps I collect, the pens I will write with, and so on and so forth. And my accumulation has to do with the idea, when Santa Claus, I blame Santa Claus, by the way, it's a good one to blame, because I never had Santa Claus until my mother and father, who were directly from China, lived with my modern aunt and uncle. And they decided to treat me to the idea of Santa Claus. And one day when I was almost 6 years old, we had Christmas, and I woke up, I didn't know what Christmas was, I just knew Christmas was, you know, because every time I got a present, my mother would open it right away. We just opened the presents as they arrived. Well, we did a little bit of that, but suddenly one day I woke up, and there was everything I had thought I would like for Christmas or for a toy that I had talked about, everything. Wagons and mechanical sets and this and that game and cowboy outfit. I thought, this is wonderful. I have options. I will always have this. So I've taught some of my godchildren this. The parents blame me. I always say to them when they go out and say, no, no, you want to take 3 books. You just want to take 1 book. You want options. What if you got bored with that one? Take 3 of it. Take a half a dozen. You know, you want to take some toys. Here's a bag for you. Here, carry 5 of them and 6 of them. And I don't see why not.
Yeah.
You can't have it all, but it's time that you got as much as possible. You know, it's like eating great food, and people always say, oh, I'm on a diet, and I always say to them, please, you know, you're going to be thin forever. Enjoy. Of course, I went overboard, and I had my heart attacks because it was probably bad diet, bad living habits, but a good time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the cover of Not Yet features a hummingbird, and that's significant because this is the very closing scene of the book.
Yes.
And yet, what is observed with the hummingbird, there's a hummingbird who tries to attack its own reflection and collapses, but the instruction is, no, don't try to pick it up. Don't help.
No, give it a chance to find its own consciousness. I think that's what it meant. I didn't understand it symbolically. I just wrote it, actually, because it came to me as a very moving image when I was recovering with my goddaughter in Arizona. She's a nurse in Arizona. And it was just incredible. I was sitting in her backyard in the comfortable chair, and suddenly I heard this beating, 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 beating. It was a buzz beat, and it was like, when I had my heart attack, and I felt it, and I began to panic, I thought, oh no, I'm having another. But then my goddaughter came to the veranda, and she saw me looking absolutely confused, and she said, what's wrong? And I said, well, I don't know, I think I'm having it, but listen, can you hear this? And it dawned on me, and she said, turn around slowly, and I turned around, and there was a hummingbird sort of buzzing towards me, and back towards me, and back, and apparently I had moved my chair right underneath the feeding stall that she had for the hummingbirds, this little thing filled with honey liquid. And so she said, just move away slowly. And I did. And then it just flew up and went on about its business. And I was dazzled. And suddenly its mate was attacking the glass doors on the veranda. And it smashed into itself, its own image, and collapsed. And I was going, oh my gosh, and I wanted to pick it up. And my goddaughter said, no, don't. Leave it alone, because you don't want to touch it. It'll be okay. If it's okay, it'll be okay. If it's not, then we'll have to do something. And we waited for a few moments, and it kind of buzzed around, shook itself up, hopped, and then went up into the air, looked around to see if he was okay, I guess, I don't know, and then flew back to be with its mate. And so I thought to myself, yeah, I've had a bump, and I've smashed, and I'm up, and hummingbirds seem to disobey the rules of flight, because until we understood how that worked, you know, in terms of physics, it was always amazing to see them go up, down, sideways, however they do it. And I thought, that's like my life. That's like my life. It's like love itself, too. You have a crash now and then, and you better just pick yourself up, and you surely learn something. And in the end, that image came to me, and I realized that we're still in flight. I'm okay. I'm in flight.
It's been lovely chatting with you, Wason Choi, author of Not Yet, here at the Brisbane Writers' Festival.
Thank you for having me.
This has been John Frame for This Way Out.
This Way Out has a gift for you, and it's coming just in time for the holidays.
From a classically trained balladeer to a duo featuring a transgender frontman.
The heaven dogs got the old show blues.
To a venerable gay punk rock band. Audiophile featured a wide variety of music and musicians in 2009. Hi, I'm Christopher David Trentum. J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and I feature our top 8 picks of the year on our annual half-hour Audiophile Year in Review, the week of December 21st, here on This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Michael LeBeau, Tanya Kane Perry, John Frame, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible only by donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KALW San Francisco, California, 7LTN Launceston, Tasmania, WZKW Kingsville, Ohio, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
We want to thank our guests tonight, which include David Elliott from calling us from Washington.
Absolutely.
And who else do we have?
Well,
we talked about the election.
We were on the show tonight.
We're always
on the
show.
We were talking about the election, of course. And then we had the new president of GLAAD.
Yes, Jarrett Berrios calling in from Boston.
And Nick, do you remember what GLAAD stood for?
Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation.
Absolutely.
.org.
Great organization. And also then we had First Fathers.
Fathers First.
Fathers First. Sorry. Fathers First. And we had Dr.
Larry,
Ponder.
Larry
Dr.
Ponder.
Larry Ponder. And Rob Keeling.
And next week we're going to be talking about the Christmas blues and a wrap-up about the election.
Yes, there's an election on the 12th.
This Saturday.
This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audiophile segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit JD's website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
There are places you go to get the quick news.
You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip. The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than just the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touches our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations.
You need a choice. And that's why you tune to community radio. Because you have to know more.
People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored,
commercial-free,
Pacifica Radio,
KPFT, Houston.
Picture yourself driving home listening to a great story or a song or a discussion.
Suddenly, you find yourself parked, but rather than turn the radio off, you stay in your car to hear what you're listening to the end.
That's called a driveway moment.
A driveway moment?
Yes, it's that moment that you just can't get out of the car because what you're hearing is just that good.
Then hey, what better place to support KPFT?
KPFT features music, news, and talk that is so compelling people will do anything to hear the end of it. If you're in your car right now and have your cell phone with you, as soon as you pull in, give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314.
Give me that number again.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.